I guess I can understand the rationale, but it's still jarring. Wikipedia lists Charles Manson's occupation as singer-songwriter, and he is thus, in their eyes, professional peers with Taylor Swift. I'm Chris Rodell, and this is the Use All the Crayons podcast, the one with no discernible format or purpose. Yet, I sense after more than a year of reckless tinkerings, I've attained format compatibility that someplace that isn't too difficult to produce and reliably replicate, yet is still a source of fun and whimsy for you, the listener. And the use of the singular is deliberate. You just might be the only listener. My stats page says we're a long, long way from Super Bowl numbers every podcaster envisions he or she will gather once the on button goes green. My initial idea was to make Use of the Crayons as a Latrobe-centric variety show. I'd invite members of the community to read their favorite tips and then answer some softball questions about Fred or Arnold. When this worked, I thought we'd achieve something special. And one day, maybe we'll return to that. But for now, all you're going to get are stories, something funny or shocking. I think that is my most valuable currency. Plus, it's just much easier me talking into a microphone and doesn't get much more simple than that. And if this turns out to be the format that succeeds in finally bringing me subscription and advertising revenues, leading to long, elusive solvency, well, won't that make a dandy story? It's going to take a lot of commitment, I fear we cannot summon, but if we all become less intent on mass agitation, the calm before the storm will one day become the calm before the calm. This is from 2020-2021. This is the kind of reckless confession that in these sensitive times is bound to backfire, but here goes. I'm at heart a straight man who detests seeing lots of fruits in his bar. Bear with me. See, I'm the kind of guy that spends a lot of time sitting in bars wondering why I spend so much time sitting in bars. It's not that I'm lonely, ever. Sit in bars as long as I do, and you're bound to spend some of the time waiting for someone to sit next to you. I think it makes some people uncomfortable to see a man or woman solitarily engaged in thought. One bar patron likes to point out when I'm sitting alone, and that I'm sitting there all alone. "There's Rodell sitting with all his friends," he'll snort. I tell him that a man with 1,000 voices in his head is never alone. That's true. I have a ceaseless inner dialogue going on that may or may not include the topics of baseball, politics, science, arts, and what the romance writers refer to as l'amour. My kids are now 21 and almost 16. Remember, this was written a few years ago. So if I go home, it's likely they'll be watching televised entertainment aimed at their demographic and hip mothers like the Fair Valerie. The three of them cuddle up on the couch and watch movies that seek a broad audience, true, but mostly an audience of what my old man called broads, and what they now call chick flicks. So I tend to linger at the bar waiting for someone fun or interesting to sit next to me for conversation. On nights when no one does, I sit there thinking, really, really, I should just go home. But I always recollect the night from about 4 years ago when I was stationed at my corner stool in Flappers, one of three solid bars in Tin Lizzie, by happy coincidence where my office is. It was a Friday evening around 8 o'clock. I was surrounded by groups of happy, chatty people, and I was there all alone. I'm now almost 60, so my roster of wingman drinking buddies is thinning, even as their profiles is heading in the other direction. Some are dying, some have found other places to haunt, and some have embraced the sad tedium of lawful sobriety. None of this deters me from a Friday evening guzzle. I make friends easily, and I'm always accorded chummy respect by the bartender pals. But on this night, it was getting to me. I thought, man, here I am, all alone on a Friday night, surrounded by happy groups of people who must think I'm pitiful. What I'm about to say is entirely truthful, and I relate without exaggeration. Just as I was thinking that forlorn thought, a stranger from Alabama approached and tapped me on the shoulder. "Are you Chris Rodell?" I told him I was. "I'm so glad to meet you. I want to buy 20 copies of your Arnold Palmer books." I thought, man, I should never leave this place. And now I rarely ever do, even though nothing remotely like that has ever happened again. But changes in taste are challenging my default behavior. People are exerting pressure on me to get me to begin imbibing mixed drinks. They're trendy, they're artistic, they're expensive. I, for years now, have been drinking double shots of Wild Turkey on the rocks. I have heirloom reasons for doing so, but I also like to tell people I drink Wild Turkey because it's the bourbon that's most representative of who I am. I'm not a Jack or a Daniel, a Jim or a Beam, and I'm not a Basil or a Hayden. I'm a turkey that sometimes still gets wild. I like that for years now. I can walk into a bar and have my preferred libation in my hand about the same instant as my butt cheeks settle onto a bar stool. I don't like to be quizzed about what I want, and I don't like being handed a laminated drink menu or directed to puzzle over some pastel scribblings on a dusty chalkboard. I just want my drink neat and fast. I'd be right at home at Martini's Bar in the wonderful It's a Wonderful Life, where Nick the bartender tells Clarence the fairy, I mean angel, hey look mister, we serve hard drinks in here for people who want to get drunk fast. We don't need any characters around to give the joint atmosphere. The fancy mixed drink has changed the whole dynamic of the bartender-customer relationship. He or she used to pour you a drink and then move on to the next thirsty customer. Nowadays, the preening bartender stands there to detect your reaction and wait for you to shower him or her with praise, like a soldier awaiting their medal. He asks if I like it. He asks if the ingredient state's differential is bold enough. He asks if the drink is superior to the foxy chick who pours the late night shift. The only question I like to hear from a bartender is when he asks, you ever going to tip more than a quarter, big shot? Don't hold your breath. I like my drinks direct, upfront, unvarnished. I don't want any fruit in them. I resent being schooled on all the precious garnishings. Drinks now feature blood oranges, Luxardo, gourmet cherries, and other foreign elements that stand a chance of demolishing the tasteful integrity of the liquor. It's something I learned from spending a splendid day, with Wild Turkey master distiller Jimmy Russell. He's the reason I remain devoted to the brand. I'll never forget the Manhattan dude who had the audacity to order a bourbon and Coke right in front of the great man. Horrified, Russell exclaimed, please, it took me 7 years to make it. Don't ruin it in just 6 seconds. Keep it straight. I've been that way ever since. And that's the story of how I became who I am, a defiantly straight man who detests being in a bar full of fruits. I sometimes wonder if the Earth has antagonistic feelings toward its inhabitants. Like if 2,000 or 3,000 of us get wiped out in some natural disaster, Earth doesn't sigh and say, oh, now that feels better. This is from 2012. I mentioned this to a friend a while back, and I felt self-conscious eating a banana in public. Like I was afraid someone would snap a picture and invite cruel captions. I don't know what you're doing with your banana, he said, but you just need to bite it. Since last year, I probably spent more time thinking about how to eat a banana than most people. That was when our fourth grader came home and said, look, here's how Mr. Walker says monkeys eat bananas. She took a perfectly good banana, turned it upside down, and squeezed the scab until there was nothing but peel and pudding. Then she handed me the mess. I don't know how she expected me to react to her little demonstration. Perhaps she was hoping to engage me in some discussion of evolutionary quirks. Instead, I said, what the hell are they teaching in school these days? Get your ass into your room and don't come out till Mommy and I are good and drunk. I probably eat a banana a day. I love them. Here's a fact. The flabby aerodynamics of banana peel make it impossible to heave one more than 20 feet from a second-story window across a tavern's gravel parking lot. That's what I do with all mine. They degrade so quickly no one's ever said, geez, how come there's always a hazardous number of banana peels in the pond parking lot? Hold, please. We're going to press on here. Just pretend you didn't hear that. I guess we can blame the Stooges for the mistaken belief that stepping on a banana peel can knock the legs out from under dimwits. It happened all the time with the Stooges, and it happened with the old battle axe played by Ethel Merman in the near-perfect 1963 screwball comedy It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. I don't know whether or not monkeys eat bananas upside down or not, but I know adding monkey to anything improves everything. I was thinking about this as I was listening to a string of great monkey rock songs. And wouldn't monkey rock songs category improve the Grammys? There's Monkey Man by the Stones, one of their finest. Shock the Monkey by Peter Gabriel. Punish the Monkey by Mark Knopfler. And the cheeky Tweeter and the Monkey Man by the Traveling Wilburys. Delbert McClinton has a song called Monkey Around. I really should play the whole thing for you, but I think there's some kind of infringement going on there. I saw Bruce Springsteen monkeying around with a backup singer the very night I heard him sing his great monkey song, the obscure Part Man, Part Monkey. It was 1988, the Tunnel of Love tour. I remember seeing him actually making out on stage in between songs with a bandmate. And no, it wasn't Little Steven. I know what you're thinking. Shocking! A rock and roll singer kissing a girl who wasn't his wife. Yes, my prudish friend, I remember thinking the exact same thing. At the time, he was married to the luscious Julianne Phillips, an 80s vixen who had more hair on the floor than on the floor of an unswept beauty salon. The onstage woman with whom he was making out? Patti Scalfa, Springsteen's wife since 1990. Part Man, Part Monkey references the Scopes Monkey Trial and comes down squarely on the side of the chimps. And who can forget Inherit the Wind, the Spencer Tracy movie about the historic trial? Outstanding. Val and I just watched another great monkey movie, 2011's Rise of the Planet of the Apes, starring James Franco. We loved it, as did 83% of America's critics on Rotten Tomatoes. In it, the Franco character has a super intelligent chimp for a chum. It turns out as well as it did for him as a crazy Long Island lady who owned Travis, the pet chimp who attacked her friend, mauling her so badly she needed a face transplant. It's a horrific story, and I always feel shame for chuckling when recalling the tabloid headlines, Furious George. So there you have it, a comprehensive story about bananas and monkeys. Or as Troy McClure said on The Simpsons when he performed the musical version of The Planet of the Apes, it has everything from chimpanzee to chimpanzee. And that's time for me to peel and eat my banana. But first I'm closing the drapes. I think we've all had enough monkey business for one day. I was deeply flattered the other day when my daughter, 19, asked me for some life advice, but I'm self-aware enough to realize that if I was anyone else and saw her asking me for advice, I'd think, what could she possibly hope to learn from that jackass? As always, number 1001 of Use All the Crayons, The Colorful Art, The Colorful Guide to Simple Human Happiness, learn the fine art of knowing precisely when to quit. Thank you.